There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Prepare yourself for the only talk radio show you'll want to turn up.
Crank this thing.
Sirius XM Pandora presents the place where your hard rock and metal voice can still be heard.
You bet your ass, baby.
Unfiltered, uncensored, say whatever you want.
Hit the record button. Anything can happen, you know?
I know that ain't nobody out there came to be mellow tonight, now did you? I say there ain't nobody. I say there ain't nobody not out there that even wants to be a little bit mellow. Now is there? Anybody wants to get mellow, you can turn around and get the fuck out of here, all right?
This is the Trunk Nation Podcast with host A. Trunk.
What's up, everybody? It's Eddie Trunk, and welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast, bringing you news-making interviews with the biggest names in rock and metal. Each and every Thursday, new episodes. Be sure to subscribe so you do not miss one. And thank you for listening. And thank you for downloading, streaming, available, of course, on all of your favorite podcast platforms. We're going to bring you this week an interview that I did very recently on my SiriusXM radio show, Trunk Nation, with Tony Iommi. It is always a huge honor when you can get an artist of this stature on the show. I have been fortunate enough to know Tony and do a lot with him over the decades, and it's always a treat when he makes some time to talk with me. In this case, he gave me an hour talking about the new reissue and remix of the Black Sabbath live album, Live Evil, and of course, we get into a lot of other stuff as well. As I tell you guys each and every week on the podcast, if you are in the U.S. and Canada, U.S. or Canada, I should say, and you're only listening to this podcast, you're only getting a tiny fraction of what I do on the radio live each and every day. So please join me for Trunk Nation Monday through Friday, Faction Talk, SiriusXM Channel 103, or anytime on the SiriusXM app. We start live daily at 3 o'clock Eastern, noon Pacific. There's replays of the show every night at midnight Eastern, 9 Pacific, and full shows, audio, video, and more anytime on the SiriusXM app. Again, we only give you a little taste here on the podcast, but be sure to join me if you can get SiriusXM for the daily show. Hope you come on board. Without further ado, one of the icons, as I call him, the founding father of heavy music, the one and only Tony Iommi on this week's podcast.
It's one thing falling in love with a house, picturing yourself moving in and calling it home, and quite another navigating the world of price negotiating, mortgage lenders, and finding the budget that works best for you. An agent who's a Realtor can make understanding that world easier. Realtors have the expertise, access to proprietary data, and tools to help you get from imagining living somewhere to actually doing it. That's the kind of help we can provide. Because that's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, you put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor, because you know the bigger the fight, the better the reward. Medela, the mark of the fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Tone, how are you, buddy?
Hello, Eddie. I'm fine. Thanks very much. You?
I'm good. You know, summer has just started here, and, you know, we're just kind of hoping for some better weather, at least in the Northeast where I live. It's been quite rainy lately, but nice to have the summer here, although it'll be over in a flash. Yet, do you have any plans? Do you have any good stuff when summer comes around?
Yeah, I mean, we sort of come down to it. We've got a house, which I'm at now, down by the sea, so we come down here for a few days every couple of weeks in the summer. It's been nice. I mean, weather's been great at the moment. But again, England have had a lot of rain and then and then a lot of sun and then droughts, and we'll get everything.
Yeah, no doubt. No stranger to some rain there. Well, Tone, I appreciate you doing this because I know it is the evening there in England, and I appreciate you taking the time to check in. Of course, another great project to talk about here today, and that is the reissue and the remix of the Live Evil album. And I know when we spoke last, Tony, you were telling me that there was a lot of Sabbath reissue stuff coming down the line and stuff you were involved in and looking after. When did the idea, obviously it's celebrating 40 years remarkably since this came out, but when did the idea first come up to reissue this and more importantly to remix it?
Well, I think Geezer and myself have never been happy with the mix, and so that was the first thing to do, really, is to get it remixed, because obviously when we actually recorded the album in different cities, we'd done sort of in America, that it wasn't well recorded, and the sound was never good. It was leaking into different mics. Guitar was coming through the drum mics, and it was a bit of a disaster, really. So my idea, Angie's idea, we wanted to get the sound better if we could, you know, and get it remixed. And so this came up a while back. I mean, this was done many months ago, really.
You know, it's interesting because there's always been so much made of the mix of Live Evil. You just touched on it yourself, but obviously it was a real touchstone in Ronnie leaving the band. Ronnie was out of the band before the record actually came out. And I know this is even touched on in the booklet to the reissue, but there was all these stories of who was sneaking into the studio, what have you. And then according to the booklet in this remix, it says that maybe all of that was nonsense and none of that was really happening. And the guy who was working on the record initially was just impaired or high or what have you, and was like hallucinating the whole thing. So could you provide now, 40 years later, some clarity on what actually went on back then? Do you know?
I mean, even less clarity now, 40 years later. Well, you know, obviously, there's been a lot of years gone by, and Ronnie and ourselves spoke when we got back together, and as you know, we got on great as time went on. And this subject did come up again, and apparently it was a load of nonsense. I mean, when it was being mixed, I mean, we were told these stories, and Geezer and I were told that Ronnie was coming in the studio and changing all the sounds. It was just an awkward time for us because we were going through quite a few not very nice things at that time, and to hear this, it was sort of angering us all, really, and it got to sort of separate the band, basically.
So did you the original mix that came out when it did come out? Ronnie's now gone; he's off to do Dio. There's you and Geezer kind of quarterbacking this thing. And the record does come out, and if I recall, it did pretty well, and it was pretty well received. But obviously, it was under strange circumstances. Did you feel at the time when the record initially came out that it you were unhappy with it right from the start in terms of sonically?
Yeah, it was never right. I mean, we had problems with, as I say, the leaking into other mics from the guitar and drums leaking into something else. And it, in those days, it was difficult. I mean, obviously, later on, when it was being remixed, you can do a lot more technical stuff to it. There's a lot more opportunity to be able to pull things away and tighten it up. Where in the days when we did that, it was still on tape, and you couldn't really mess around with it too much. Once it's there, and you had to sort of deal with what you got, really. But of course, when Davis started remixing it, back and then send it to me, and I'd get back to him, and we'd talk about it. And he had a problem trying to separate sounds because, as I say, it was pretty horrendous, really.
Mm. Well, I think it's greatly improved. I really do. I love. I mean, it's there seems to be a lot more bottom end to it. I think Vinny's drums sound great. The guitars. I mean, it's definitely improved, I believe, over the original mix. I mean, as a kid, when I got the original mix, I mean, I loved it just because I loved the band so much. But as you get older, you can definitely hear that change. Tell me about the idea. Let's go back even a little further now. So it's amazing to me because, as we all know, the 70s were the era for live albums. They were like benchmark releases. In some cases, they broke the band and put the band on the map, and the double live record was the standard in the 70s. It's remarkable to me that Sabbath, in the original lineup with Ozzy and Bill, never did a proper live record. There was that Live at Last record, but I know that was... you know, that was shrouded in some drama as well. But why was it that Sabbath, one of the biggest bands of the 70s, never did a proper live record back then?
You know, I don't really know. We tended to sort of be working a lot and doing lots of shows, but we never, ever did a live album, and I couldn't tell you why. It just, probably at the time, the management we had and all the rest of it, it just wanted us to work, and we never even got round to thinking of doing a live album.
Because it's amazing when you think about it, this really was the first proper live Sabbath record, and it was at the time with two what were viewed as new members. Certainly Vinny coming in during the Heaven and Hell tour, and then Ronnie after two studio records. You know, it's just odd that it took that long. Even listening to it back, listening to the remix the other day, I think it's in the middle of the song, Heaven and Hell. Ronnie's talking to the crowd, and he says, by the way, you're being recorded and filmed because there's finally going to be a Sabbath live record. It was even said in that way, just to like, because I guess the fans were sort of clamoring at that point, right?
Yeah, well, a lot of people had asked us why we'd never done a live album, and of course, and with Ronnie, we were able to do a live album at that point, and just a shame we didn't think about the actual recording side of it, you know, because basically we had somebody come in and just mic it up, and off we went. There was no proper sound checks or separation or anything, you know. It's a bit of a shame, really, because it could have been so much better sound from the off. But at least, you know, Wynn's saved a lot of it and been able to pull things out of the bag, and then he'd send them to me, and I'd say, well, yeah, that's a lot better, you know.
What was the approach to going in to make this record, Tony? Did you guys, when you did this, you actually recorded a bunch of shows, right? But the record ended up actually being sourced from just two primary shows, but you went and recorded a run of them, right?
We didn't record that many. I think there's only about three or four, but they were even worse. You know, we had to try and pick the best parts, and it was really difficult. And if only we'd have been more involved and been able to sort of say, I don't know why we didn't, but sort of say, well, because you're relying on other people to record it and to tape it and make sure that's right. And of course, when you get into the studio to listen to them, you think, oh my God, and the engineer's going, oh, it's all leaking here, and the drums are all over the guitar mics, or guitars are over the drum mics, or whatever. And it's so difficult, and in them days, you couldn't sort of separate it that well. As I say, it's only later on with the technology that you can sort of do that better, really.
I'm wondering about the set list when you guys went and started putting this together, because obviously you've got at this point two records with Ronnie, two incredible records, which you want to showcase, Heaven and Hell and Mob Rules. Yeah. But you also had, as I mentioned, there was never a proper Sabbath record with the Ozzy material. So that's interspersed throughout as well. We know that later on, especially when you got together with Ronnie for the final time, Ronnie didn't sing any of the Ozzy stuff. You guys didn't play any of that. But back then, with him being relatively new to the band and obviously two studio records, what was his demeanor about singing the older Sabbath stuff?
Well, I mean, he knew when he came into the band that he'd obviously have to sing some of the Sabbath stuff, and he was fine with it. It was good, and I think he'd done a great job of it, the way he would put it over. Ronnie was very, as you know, like very dramatic. He was very good at putting stuff over. And I thought he'd done a great job of the old stuff. But again, you know, everybody's always going to be familiar with what Ozzy did, because that was the original. And it was so difficult for Ron to come in and jump in that place, because he'd done a really good job of them, I thought. But of course, we had to do them, and we liked to do them. And we liked, it was nice to hear a different version as well with him singing it. But ultimately, we wanted to do our own thing, which we did in the end, you know, which was Heaven and Hell, and we played all the Dio with Sabbath stuff.
Yeah, I always thought, and I loved Ronnie's interpretations, if you will, of the older stuff. And I love when I listen to this, I love the song Black Sabbath. I mean, I love the way he sings that. I love the way he sings NIB, War Pigs. I mean, again, Ozzy is unique to Ozzy, and there's only one Ozzy. We know that. But I loved Ronnie. As you said, there was a certain drama in the way he put those songs over and delivered them. And I always thought that was like really, really great. I loved the way he tackled that material at that time. It's one of the reasons why I'm glad this record's getting another look, because people who weren't around back then, to hear Ronnie's take on those songs, I think is really cool.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, Ronnie, as you know, he always gave it all. And he'd always do his best, and he was really particularly concerned that he would, you know, give it everything he got. And he always did. He's never, ever failed, Ronnie. He was absolutely a star, you know, tremendous singer. And he put the old songs over in his way. And of course, you know, it was very difficult to be able to come in and follow Ozzy and be able to sing them. You know, here we are with a new singer, and Ronnie's having to sing the old songs. But he was bloody good.
Did you feel, Tony, that he had increased confidence on this tour versus the original Heaven and Hell tour? Because I would think on the Heaven and Hell tour, he's really the new guy. He's really the guy right in the footsteps of Ozzy. He told me himself that it was rough sledding a little bit in the beginning, where he would be getting the middle finger, whereas Ozzy, all that stuff. Now, this record being recorded on the Mob Rules tour, he's entrenched. He's got two studio records under his belt already. Everybody knows he's the guy at that point. Just from being on tour with him on that run, did you sense that there was more of a confidence about him and more of a presence about him in the band on the road?
Absolutely. Definitely. I mean, once we'd recorded and released Heaven and Hell, we knew we loved it. It was different. It was something that we were offering that was, I thought, were great. And it took the next album, really, for Ronnie. Ronnie was seeing it on tour. He was seeing, he was getting more and more taken, but you know, our fans were accepting him more, and it didn't take that long before we had all the audience back again. I mean, obviously, you're always going to get some that don't agree with it, because that's the way it is. But we managed to maintain a lot of our original fans, and they really took to Ronnie, and certainly the Mob Rules album, when that came out, Ronnie was very confident in that. Because he'd already sort of been able to establish himself with Heaven and Hell, and the Mob Rules came out, and there it was.
Talk a little bit about Vinny's performance, because, man, again, I just listened to this remix, and I'll be honest with you, I listened to Mob Rules like crazy when it came out, but I hadn't listened to it in a while. So now that it's remixed, I spent some time listening to it the last few days, and My gosh, Vinny is a machine on this. I mean, he plays so great. And that's the other thing, because Vinny's told me that himself, that when he initially joined, I mean, he joined midstream on the Heaven and Hell tour. He was literally thrown in as a kid and didn't even have all the material down. So I'm sure for Heaven and Hell, he was very much on that tour, getting his legs, working with you guys. Same deal with him, I would think, right? Now with Mob Rules, he's been around you a little bit. Him and Geezer much more locked in. He's feeling the old material. And of course, now he has a studio record in Mob Rules that he actually played on. So I would think that this was a real important period for Vinny gelling with you guys as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Vinny was such a great drummer. And he just added so much energy to the songs. And as we went on, you could feel him. He was, you know, he got a bigger key, he got more drums, he got more confidence within the shows. And my God, he's a tremendous drummer. And he would catch the things Geezer and I were playing. And that's the essence of it. You've got to have, it's got to follow the guitar and the bass. You know, it has to follow, it has to be a unit. And Vinny really stepped in there really well. And, of course, after playing with us for a while, as you say, when we'd done Mob Rules, he was well up there. He knew exactly how we played and where we'd sort of go to. And he was just perfect for that lineup.
And Tone, the other thing, too, is there's over the years, we've found that so many classic records that were done live from the 70s, it's revealed that, and even into the 80s, that it's revealed that a lot of those records weren't really truly live. There was a lot that was re-recorded. There was a lot of touch-up. There were a lot of fixes. In some cases, the only thing live is the audience track, you know, the applause track.
Yeah.
For Live Evil, did you guys go in and fix much, or was it pretty much, you know, warts and all?
Well, we fixed bits, but you couldn't fix much because, as I said, there was that much leakage that you couldn't. If I wanted to redo the guitar, you couldn't pull the. If you pull the guitar out, you'd still hear it coming through the drum mics. So it'd be, you had to sort of take what you got. I mean, I did try and put parts on, but it was very hard because it was just that much coming through everything else that you couldn't really get away with that, you know.
Martin Birch, of course, did the Mob Rules and Heaven and Hell. Legendary, sadly passed away recently, but legendary guy. Was there thoughts of bringing him in to record the live record?
It would have been nice to have Martin because he was there from the off with Ronnie and us. But I don't think he was available at that time. I can't remember what. I don't know if he was doing Iron Maiden or somebody. He was doing somebody else at the time. And I actually don't know how we ended up using who we did. I don't know how that happened, but I think Martin wasn't capable of doing it at that time.
Yeah, that timing would be right around the time he started up with Maiden. And of course, once he started with Maiden, he was basically another member of that band. He had done every record. So Rod Smallwood and the boys may have had him fully locked down at that point already.
I would have thought so. I would have thought so. And he was good, Martin. I mean, he done his apprenticeship with us, with Ronnie as well, you know. So we went through the things together of building the sound. So because he had to learn how Geezer and I and Ronnie and Bill played together, and he got the essence of it. You know, he'd always thought a bass sound as just a bass. And I used to say to Martin, well, you've got to. Geezer is such a different bass player. His power, his style, the way he just needed to come out that sort of aggression in his playing. And Martin realized that in the end because he said, oh, it's distorted. I said, well, yeah, it might be distorted to you, but listen to it as a whole with the band. And that's what it is. That was a part of the major part of the sound. Geezer, myself, the Wall of Sound, and Bill, of course. But But and he eventually got it and said, "Yeah, I get what you mean."
And Tone, listening, you know, one of the things that's interesting about this too, when you listen to the arrangements of the songs and how you guys did this and put the set list together, I think I counted in listening to it back, which I had forgotten about, that the riff to the song Heaven and Hell comes back about two other times in two other songs within the structure of the set. Because I think you put a little bit of it in Sign of the Southern Cross and maybe even in Paranoid or something, it comes up a lot. So you guys really had some fun with arrangements live back then, didn't you?
It was really good. As I say, we'd run because it would encourage us to try different things, which was really good. And we'd be able to do that. We'd be able to... We could actually pull songs out of the hat and do them instead of, you know, Ronnie was capable of doing all that catalogue. And that was a great thing. And we could fiddle around with them and put a bit of another song in and just a bit of teasers coming in and out. Just a bit of thought into the stage set, you know. And Ronnie was always involved in it. And it was really a good band, really a tight band. We got really tight and we'd encourage each other, which was great. You know, we'd come off and I'd say to Ronnie, not just for the sake of it, well, you sounded great, and he'd say the same, and we'd all encourage each other. And that was a major part of it as well, to push each other. And Ronnie'd sort of say, well, you know, go on, play along a solo or play this. And it was good to hear that instead of hearing, oh, don't play a solo. You know, it was good to sort of be encouraged that way. And we'd do that with each other.
Yeah, you do have a guitar solo on this record. I think that it's within Heaven and Hell, actually, where you take a pretty extended standalone solo. When you listen back to this, when they were doing the remix, I don't know how long it had been since you listened to the record, but when you listen to your performance as a guitar player at that time, what are your thoughts about it? Because I was thinking about this in listening to it. It was an interesting period. It was the early 80s. And of course, times were changing. And you had Eddie Van Halen at his peak, who of course had just opened for you a few years earlier. And what he was doing, setting the guitar world on its head. And of course, you know, Ozzy had Randy Rhoads. Everybody was talking about him. You had all these types of hotshot guitar players coming up, the LA scene and all of that. Was some of that impacting you at all, or were you just kind of in your zone at that point and weren't really paying attention much to it?
I think you do get in your zone. I mean, since the 70s, I'd always played a solo. I mean, yes, I got carried away a bit too long sometimes, and I, you know, and listening back to things, bloody hell, that was a bit over the top, too long. But you get in that evening of playing, you just sort of get taken over with it, and it doesn't seem as long as it is, if you know what I mean. And we'd done it from the 70s, and it was sort of the thing. Everybody done guitar solos and drum solos in the 70s, and we sort of, that was what we did, and we just never changed. We went on and on and on and always done that.
And during, last thing on Live Evil, and again, the remix is out now. It's two discs. You get the original mix remastered and then the new remix on here. Did you have any extra? Obviously, you didn't because it's not in the box set, but was there anything extra recorded, or were there any outtakes from this or songs that didn't make it onto the original record that you maybe wanted to include here that you couldn't find? Do you recall any variances to the set or any extra material that was anywhere?
No, I don't actually, Eddie. Basically, what was sent me was that and what we picked out, really. We didn't have anything that was different, really, that we never used.
And there, because there's a point in the show where Ronnie tells the audience that they are being recorded and filmed. Do you know, now did that film, I don't recall, did that actually come out? Is there a full concert document from the Mob Rules on video?
I don't think so. I really don't know that. You know what? I actually can't remember that. I can't remember if there is or there isn't. I would have thought there's not, otherwise it would have been out.
Yeah, that's what I would think too. And that's why, again, I just listened to it earlier today, knowing I was going to talk to you, and I ran it through from top to bottom. And in one of the stage raps, Ronnie says to the audience, just so you know, you're being recorded and filmed for an upcoming release. And that took my interest a little bit, because I said, maybe there's a video companion to this somewhere that we don't know about.
Yeah, maybe there was, but maybe we scrapped it. I actually don't remember that at all, Eddie.
Well, maybe that's... Maybe in a year or two we'll be talking about the Blu-ray or DVD release that we both don't know exists that's coming out.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's amazing that there are so many things floating around. I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, check your archives, because you may have it and don't even know it. Could be somewhere in that big room of riffs that you have.
Yeah. I mean, I can't keep track of, because we've been doing these box sets with Ozzy and all these different things, of catching up what you did in them days and what, talking about those tracks and then going in now to the Sabbath with Dio, and which I was waiting for this period to come up, because I thought I really enjoyed the Ronnie period, I must say. Well, I enjoyed the Aussie period, but it was so different. We had to challenge again when we had Ronnie. It was another challenge to start and establish ourselves again. And it was great, because it was making us work hard and making us become a unit and work together. And that's why we'd break up and reform again and break up and reform again, because we had something very special.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And I miss it tremendously, because you guys were just, it was so good right up to the very end, right up to the last album, The Devil You Know, which was just a phenomenal, phenomenal record. With that in mind, it's a nice way to take a minute here to segue into some other things. Now, you referenced this before. The early Sabbath catalog with Ozzy, much of that has been reissued in box sets as well. And I would tell my audience, if you miss those, go check those out, because there's some great extra content and fantastic packaging on those as well. Ironically, I don't know if you realize this, 31 years ago today, the Dehumanizer album came out, speaking of the Dio era. And, that's a record. Yeah, I just saw that online. And that's a record, I got to tell you, Tone, that even as big of a fan as I am, I want to say I missed out on it, but I didn't give it the time it probably should have had when it initially came out. And I had a whole new respect for that record ever since you guys came back together in 06. I remember talking to Ronnie and him saying to me, I said, well, what are you excited about being back with the guys? And he said, well, I can't wait to play some stuff from Dehumanizer. And I was like, well, that's an odd answer, because that's not the record people immediately go to with him. And him saying to me, no, stuff like After All and I and all these songs, he goes, they're really important songs that I think should get a second look. And when you guys went out and started playing again under the name Heaven and Hell and featured a lot of that, I thought it was fantastic. And I absolutely love that record now. Are there any plans to do anything with that at some point?
Oh, I'm sure there will, Eddie. The idea is, as he's coming around, we're trying to get through stuff now and look at albums that we've done, and I'm sure it will come to that at some point, yeah, because that was an album when we did it. It was a funny period in the music world for us,
right?
The music was sort of going somewhere else, and I think that album, as you say, I think it got overlooked in a lot of ways, and it's always a case that years later people go, oh God, I've just heard this album, and they attach themselves to it again. But at the time, it took a while. It didn't sort of grasp everybody like the first two albums we did with Ronnie, and it sort of got overlooked. But it's nice to revisit all these again.
Yeah, I mean, that was the 90s, and that was a tough time for everybody with the music climate shifting. But I think that that album, I'm even guilty of it to some degree, not giving it the attention it deserved at the time. And going back in retrospect, there's some fantastic stuff on that album. You had said the last time we talked that there is a lot of later Sabbath stuff you were going to be looking at, including some of the Tony Martin era stuff. You had talked about trying to find the tapes for Born Again, the record with Ian Gillan. Where are you at with any other reissues? Is all that still coming? Is that what you're working on these days?
Yeah, there'll be stuff coming. I mean, again, you know, if I say something, people expect it then and then. But you can't do it that quick. You have to go through the routine of, like, now we're on the Dio package. And then it'll move on. And the idea is, yes, the Tony Martin stuff will be coming out. And I'm looking forward to that as well, because there's a lot of great stuff on there that got overlooked and that people would, you know, that wouldn't know of or didn't even know that there was an album out with Tony Martin, a lot of people. And it'd be nice to be able to show that again. And as far as, again, I said to you, and I've mentioned before about the Ian Gillan, the Born Again album, and as soon as I mention it, people think, oh, I'm working straight on it. Well, no, because you have to get through the others first to get to that. And then we have got the tapes now to Born Again. They're being transferred from reel to reel to digital, so we can get a proper look at it. But again, it all takes time, and it has to be done in its stages. We're hoping to release all the stuff at some point. It's just a matter of going through it bit by bit, really. And I know people get anxious and, well, where is it? I'd like to be like that. I'd like to say, yes, it's here. But it just takes time, you know, to release it. You've got to release it in stages.
Well, if we're looking at this chronologically, and of course I don't want to forget about the record with Glenn, Seventh Star, because that's a phenomenal record as well. But if we're going chronologically, so now Live Evil is out. The next one would be Born Again in the lineage. So you're saying that's fantastic news to hear that you found the tapes, because I knew that was an issue for a while. So that means you can, because the mix on that album was always something that was up to a lot of debate. So can you tell people what you'd like to do to Born Again now that you've got the tapes?
Well, I mean, when it was originally recorded, it was really set in the studio. It sounded great. We loved it. We went on tour then, and somehow the sound got muffled. And whether it was from the press in or what, I don't know. But I'd like to look at that. I mean, I have heard, when I've played the Born Again album again, there's parts where I go, oh, that should have been louder, this should have been more prominent, and drums or whatever it may have been. There's things that really need adjusting on it, because there's some really good songs on that album too. But it would be nice to give it an up-to-date quality now, you know, of what you can do now, and be able to listen to it differently. Because obviously when you're involved with this stuff at the time, you're really nothing but it, and then you leave it into somebody else's hands, like we did with that. Off we went on tour, come back and heard it, and, oh my God, what happened? We don't want that to happen. I want to be able to pull the tapes out again and really give it a good listen to, and see what we need to adjust and change, and make it a better sounding album.
Mm. Well, Tone, I think it's great that you're looking after all these reissues. It's not all that dissimilar to what Jimmy Page did with the Zeppelin catalog after he had scaled back from playing and putting everything out in the best of ways. And is that pretty much the phase that you're in your life right now, is kind of looking after the catalog and being involved in these reissues? Miss playing live? Do you hope to go out and play live again in any capacity? Or is it really more about looking after the catalog at this point?
Well, I mean, the catalogue is just floating along, and I'm doing that when we can, when they come up. when the time comes and we do it. But I'm doing more stuff now than I've ever done. I'm involved. I've been doing a documentary at the moment, which is going to be out in September, I think. And I can't say too much about that at the moment. But
is it on Sabbath? Can you say that?
It's about. It will be about. It's about riffs, actually, about writing.
Oh.
Riffs and stuff, and also we've been working with the. I don't know if you know, we're doing a Black Sabbath ballet with the Royal Ballet in England here. So I've been working with them with the music because they're going to orchestrate it and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's really something very different for me and for us, really. So that's been, you know, all these things you're involved with now, that's been really interesting. And I've done a couple of, obviously, I played a couple of things on Ozzy's new, latest
right.
album. And it's all been good. I'm writing myself as well. I've got quite a bit of, you know, a few songs or riffs and all put together now. I've just got to decide whether I'm going to have a singer, who's going to sing or what. I don't know yet. But it's all been exciting. And the thing is, there's no rush for it. I'm doing it as we go on. And I'm enjoying doing it. It's been good to be able to sit down and put these riffs together and make them into whatever they're going to be. I mean, they're in a format of a song, but they could be instrumental. It could be anything at the moment. And that's the exciting thing. I don't know where else to go with them. But I've also been involved with other stuff like my perfume. I got this a perfume.
Oh, that's right. We spoke about that. We had you on for that. How's that going?
Very, very well. It went really well. It's their top 5 product at the moment, so it's been going extremely well. And we will be doing another one. So that's all these different things that's been going on. Because it was another interest that I had. I always liked, you know, collecting different aftershaves and perfumes over the years of touring. You know, when I'm in different countries, that's nice. I'll get that, and I collect them. And to have the opportunity when they approach me to do my own perfume, I thought that's brilliant. And they're a real top luxury perfume company in Italy.
Yeah, I had you on to talk about that, and we discussed it when that had just been announced, because there was a music companion to that too, right? Didn't you do a song or something around that time?
Yes, we did. We did an instrumental called Scent of Dark, and
yes,
Sergio, the owner of the company, also played guitar up with me on it, and we've become really close friends. I mean, I'm seeing him. He's coming over from Italy on Monday to see me, and we're in contact all the time now, and it's really good. It's all these different things that's become in my life really, you know, ahead. I'm enjoying it, being able to play music, do these other things. It's been amazing, and I do miss playing live, of course. I miss seeing the audience. And And I was doing, at one time, these talks going out doing, talking about your life, really. And, of course, and I had a lot of shows booked, certainly in Europe, you know, Germany, Italy, Belgium, all around Europe. And, of course, the COVID hit, and it just nailed it on the head. It had to stop, because you couldn't do that then. So that was something else I enjoyed, because I was talking to an audience and being involved, and there were fans asking questions and you could answer. That was good, and that was contact for me. Now, not being able to, not being out playing live, it's I do miss it. But I've not written that off. I mean, I did the thing with Ozzy. We'd done the Commonwealth Games
right.
in England. I'd done the opening for the Commonwealth Games on my own with an orchestra and whatnot, and then we closed the show, Ozzy and myself, which was really, really good.
I just read that today in the press, it said that the bull or something was named after Ozzy.
Well, the bull that was in the Commonwealth Games, which is a huge, massive mechanical thing, they were going to pull it to pieces, and somebody said, well, why don't you put it in Birmingham as an iconic thing, you know? And then they repaired the thing and made it more weatherproof, if you like, and then put out to see what they'd call it. And so people have sent suggestions in, and of course they picked Ozzy as the to call it Ozzy.
So yeah, I thought that was funny. Tone, a couple more things. I won't keep you much longer. I promise. I just so much in my head here. Speaking of Ozzy, you know, he's announced to play. I know he's been trying to play for the longest time and do a show, and he's had all these setbacks, and I hope he's okay. But he's announced to play a festival here in the U.S. in a few months, actually. And, you know, nobody's quite sure, you know, what and if he's actually going to be able to do this because of these problems that he's had. But I got to tell you this, and I don't know what you can say about this, but when that festival was about to be announced, it's called Power Trip, everybody was saying that it was going to end up being a Sabbath show. And then when it was announced as Ozzy as a solo show. Was that ever on your radar? Was there talk of Sabbath ever doing a show?
Yes, there was, yeah. But I didn't at that point. It's hard because Ozzy's been going through a lot of stuff lately, and he's in hospital and out of hospital, and he's really been fighting it. He really wants to get out there, but it's in my mind, it's very difficult to sort of say yes and think. I've got to think of the people in the band as well. I've got to think of Ozzy, if he's going to be all right to do a show and whatever. So I wasn't that comfortable with it, but I didn't know Ozzy would be doing it on his own. But it's great. I hope he can do it, and that'd be really good. And he really wants to do it, and he's really trying to pull to get himself back. I mean, he's had to go through such a lot of hard stuff lately. It's such a shame, really. But he's still fighting there.
So it was true that initially that was going to be a Sabbath date, but it sounds like you were just uneasy about the circumstances and about his condition, and that he ended up just taking it as a solo show.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, I mean we hadn't approached the others as far as doing it. I mean they might have said no, you know, but it didn't get much further than me really. But yeah, I mean that's the way it is. And if you're going to go out, I want to do a good show. I want to go out on the top and do it. I don't want to just go and slap something together, you know. And I'm not saying it would have been, but it could have been difficult.
Yeah, no, I completely understand that. And I think, and that's exactly some of the concerns that the fans are asking those questions to me every day here on the radio. I said, I don't know. I can't speak for his condition. I don't know if he's actually going to be able to do this or not and do it in a respectful way and be able to pull it off. So the clock is ticking. I guess we'll find out. But, you know, that's telling in and of itself that you considered it because you had always said when Sabbath ended that you were done as far as large scale touring. But if there was a special opportunity, you wouldn't rule out playing a song or even a show. And it sounds like if the things were aligned properly, that's still pretty much the case, given that you had considered actually doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly done the Commonwealth Games with Ozzy, and that sort of happened. But to do a full show, you've got to make sure everybody's in good shape because people are going to remember you by that show.
Yeah,
and I don't want a reputation to go downhill all of a sudden. You know, if something goes wrong or somebody can't make it, we have to cancel or whatever. Because I don't know how everybody's health is. I don't know how Bill's feeling these days, and you just don't know. So I'd like to be sure. If you're going to do anything, there's got to be it's got to be good or not bother, you know.
And one thing I want to go back to, you mentioned the Sabbath ballet. I think that is beyond fascinating because, I mean, some of the heaviest music ever made and some of the greatest riffs that you created ever made. And did you ever, in your wildest dreams, Tony, to think that, you know, I don't know what songs they're using, but something like War Pigs or The Writ or Sabbath Bloody Sabbath could end up being a ballet? I mean, there's no way you could have ever expected that.
No, not at all. Never. I mean, when we were approached by the ballet company, and Carlos Acosta was a very famous international star, you know, ballet star. He's the head of it, and he's been a fan since he lived in Cuba, and he wanted to. This has always been his dream to do it, and when he approached me about doing it, I thought, God, how are you going to do that, you know? Because, like, you're thinking, well, God, Sabbath and ballet, couldn't get more opposite, you know. But he explained it, and he was confident with it, and he brought my confidence into it, and I thought, this is good. And we worked together on it, and I worked with the guy I've been working with, he's a classical producer and whatever, arranger, and it was really, and he's over the moon to be able to work together, because it's something very different for him. And he came over to my studio and he played me the ideas of what they're thinking of doing, and are they playing it right. They're so conscientious of getting the right time in and the right pullbacks on the notes, and really, really good, and they're really working hard at it on the music side and the ballet side. I mean, I went to watch a couple of the rehearsals of the actual dancers, and they're amazing. I mean, they're so good. So hopefully it'll be a success for them, and it's going to be out in September. But the idea is they're going to do, I think, 10 shows here in Birmingham, and then London, and then somewhere else in England, and then they hopefully want to go into the bigger arenas and also tour the world. So we'll see what comes of it. But the feedback at the moment, the show's sold out just like that. So then they're so excited about it, the actual ballet company. And I am. It's such a great thing to be involved with, because it's different. And it hasn't been done before, and so, yeah.
They always say a great song is a great song, and if it's truly a great song, you can do anything with it. You can make it acoustic, you could do anything. And but Sabbath and ballet, that is not something I'd ever have thought when I got the We Sold Our Souls for Rock and Roll album as a kid and listened to all those songs, that I ever would have thought.
Yeah, well,
it would have made my parents approve at the time, Tone, if I would have said, you know, this stuff's going to be a ballet one day.
Yeah, you know what, as well, I said to the ballet, the Carlos Acosta, I said, you know, by putting this on, you're not going to get everybody just sitting there clapping like they do at the regular Swan Lake. He went, oh, no, I'm really excited, I want to see that. I said, they're going to be, you know, jumping up and singing with it. He went, oh, great, great. So they're really enthusiastic about it. And, I mean, it's amazing how they're amalgamating the tunes with it as well, you know, from going in from one to another, and then a bit of orchestration and something else, and then back into a song. It's really good. It's really interesting. Another string to our bow.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And the perfume, cologne, is it available in America for the audience listening in the U.S. right now? Is there a place they can go to order it?
Yes, I think I don't know if it's Saks that's stock it, and I know over here Harrods in London do it, and it's the big stores. It's not one of these you go out and where you buy Brut and all this stuff. It's a top class company, so the packaging and everything is absolutely top notch. But it's not cheap, but it's up there with the big brands. But I don't know who else is stocking it in America. I'm not I don't deal with that. That's down to the perfume
right.
company. But I think a company like Saks and those sort of companies would do it.
And finally, Geezer's over there now because I know he's making the rounds for his book. I may see him next week, actually, if he gets back to the States. But did you get a chance to see him at all?
No. I thought he might have given me a call, but I know what it's like doing those book tours. It's pretty hectic, and they don't give you much breathing space. You know, you're all
right
from one city to the next. But no, I was hoping to see him. And again, I haven't had much time anyway because I've been really busy here, which I'm amazed at. You know, Eddie. I thought, well, after we finished touring, I thought, well, that's it now. Do this and do that, and no, it hasn't happened. But I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying doing what we're doing, and being involved in the music is great for me. I mean, that's what I do.
Yeah, no, it's funny. You think you're going to wind down as you get older? I know. I was just mentioning this real quick to you. If you recall, I did a party for the anniversary of my radio show in Times Square in New York, and you and Ronnie and Geezer and Vinny came, and Judas Priest played. It was at the Hard Rock in Times Square. I have a phenomenal picture of you guys coming in and with me, and it's something I'll never forget. If you can believe this, Tony, that was 15 years ago, because this year is my 40th anniversary doing radio.
It's unbelievable, isn't it? How it just flies by. You know, you can't.
And I thought I was going to be slowing down, and but I'm lucky. I mean, I feel blessed to have all the opportunities, and I guess that's what comes. And you know, after you build whatever you build, that there's still, you know, that those opportunities there. So in the end, I think it keeps us young and active and still engaged.
Absolutely. I mean, it's what you do, and then a lot of things come off that. You do a good job and you get rewards. People come back and want you to do this. I mean, you've been top notch ever since, you know. I mean, that's why you're still going, because you're very good at what you do, and you have a great show, and you've got great audience. I mean, it's what you do, and you do a great job of it.
Thank you. I appreciate that very much. Coming from you, that means a lot, my friend. I do appreciate it. Last and most important thing, how is your health?
Again, you know, I'm up and down. I go for my check. In fact, I was there the day before yesterday, just getting different checks again. It's like any old person, you have problems. But no, all in all, it's been pretty good. Certainly, as far as the cancer side of it, it's been
right.
Dare I say, good. You know, I get other ailments like your hands ache and feet and things like that.
We all have that.
All things that. You know, that's
yeah.
And but apart from that, it's good, and I think doing what I'm doing keeps me up. I don't sit at home just sitting on the couch. I'm out and about doing stuff, and it's good. It keeps you motivated. It keeps you moving.
The cancer, is it the type of thing that they think they can get into remission, or is it, you know, I was speaking to Vivian Campbell, similar thing, and he was telling me it's really just for him a management thing and they can keep it under control. Similar situation there, or do they feel they could actually really knock it out for you?
Well, it's sort of that. It's keep it under control. It's one of the, so it's the same thing as Viv's got. They check your immune system all the time, make sure you keep it up, and have B12 shots, and just try and eat a bit better, and try and look after your health a bit more. You know, that's why really I had to stop these major tours, because they were long tours and late night tours. You know, by the time you'd finished playing, especially when we were in the States. And we'd have a base, say, in New York for 10 days. And we'd have our own plane and fly out to different places and come back. And by the time we get back to the hotel, it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you know.
Mm.
And these late nights were affecting me a bit. And my oncologist said, you know, you shouldn't really be flying as much and doing this amount of work. So that's sort of why it came to the end of me touring for 18 months. But, yeah, I loved it. I love touring. I love playing. I love seeing the audience. And I still want to get out and play, but I won't be able to do major tours like that. I mean, as I said before, maybe a week or two or whatever, but it's hard to do that because you have the crews at work that you have top-notch crews. You can't expect them to just do 2 weeks. They want to get out and do a year's tour, you know. I will be going out, I suppose, doing something along the line. I've been asked to do various things, and we'll see what happens.
Well, I look forward to all of it. You should give our mutual buddy Glenn Hughes a call. He's at 73 or 74. He's still like the Energizer out there in multiple bands, still singing everything incredibly.
Oh, he's unbelievable, isn't he? I mean,
he could do it.
He's in now. I'm not sure.
He's doing well. He left that band Dead Daisies. Now he's doing his own thing, and he's doing the 50th anniversary of Deep Purple Burn and running around singing that. And he just did a Black Country Communion album. And I mean, I can't keep up with him. I mean, it's amazing. He's a force of nature, that guy.
Oh, he's unbelievable. And he's one of the few singers that he can get those high notes as well at his age.
Yeah. It's insane.
Such a powerful voice, and such a great singer, and he's so energetic as well. You know, and he loves what he does, and that's brilliant. He really does enjoy it. And I think when you're that much involved and enjoy it that much, you give it everything. Like, as I said, with Ronnie, same thing.
Yeah,
he loved it, and he always give it his best. And that's the only way you should be, really.
Yeah, that Fused album you and Glenn did is still a favorite of mine. There's some great, great stuff on there. Tony, I don't want to keep you much longer. I appreciate you giving me so much time here. I know it's later there in England. It's always a great pleasure to talk to you. I want to remind everybody, the Live Evil Super Deluxe Remix Reissue Box Set CD and Vinyl is available now, so go check it out, and it'll take you back to the early 80s and some great times and some great music. And you know where to get me, Tony. Anything I can do for you, anything you want to put the word out about, don't hesitate, and enjoy the time there at the beach with your family, hopefully. I hope you have a good time there and get some good weather.
Thanks, Eddie. I appreciate it, mate. You look after yourself, and love to all the fans out there. I miss you.
All right. Thank you, Tone.
God bless, mate.
Well, just a total surreal moment for me still when I can talk to a guy like that, even though I know him quite well after all these years. I always do a good job keeping it internalized, but when it comes to the 70s guys that I grew up with, that is sacred stuff. Tony Iommi for an hour on the podcast, again, courtesy of my SiriusXM radio show, Trunk Nation, which is live Monday through Friday, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, Faction Talk 103, or anytime on the SiriusXM app. Please be sure to follow me on social media, at Eddie Trunk, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook page. Keep up with everything I have going on and everything going on in the world of rock. If you happen to be in the area of Corning, California, I'll see you guys this coming Sunday as I'll be hosting the 80s Rock Invasion at the Rolling Hills Casino with Great White, Slaughter, Vixen, and Quiet Riot. Hope to see you there if you're in that area of the U.S. this coming Sunday. Otherwise, I'll catch you hopefully on the radio every day on 103, or of course back here next Thursday for another episode of the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
There are any number of reasons you might consider selling your home. To move closer to family, live within a smaller budget, or just wanting a change of scenery. Whatever your reasons, having to figure out all the various housing market trends in your area may not be what you signed up for. That's where an agent who is a Realtor comes in. Realtors have the expertise to help you find the right price and navigate the process to sell your home in a way that's right for you. That's who we are. Realtors are members of the National Association of Realtors.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.